Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome to the Daily Jungle, or at least I think it's the Daily Jungle, because today we hopped in a time machine and went straight East Coast, old school sports talk radio. Straight sports takes for days. Philly versus New England, with Canada as the third man in. I don't know if it was good or bad, but man, it was fun. Three great guests as well. MLB Network and SI's Tom Verducci broke down the Hall of Fame ballot. Indiana Pacers guard Vic Oladipo came in for some all-star vote karma. Olympic bobsledder and former college football phenom Sam McGuffey had an incredible appearance from the bobsled team van. Alvy, it is Podcast Tuesday. Lots to get done. The Daily Jungle starts right now. In the meantime, let's start with some NBA. No secret that the Cleveland Cavaliers are going through kind of a tough stretch right now. And by tough stretch, I mean they're imploding right before our eyes. These guys have lost 9 out of 12. And when it comes to the conference standings, they're now closer to 9th than they are to 1st. And they gave up 148 at home to OKC on Saturday. Let me repeat that. They gave up 148 points at home. So I know what you're thinking. It must have been a 5-overtime game. It was not a 5-overtime game. In fact, it was a 0-overtime game. They allowed 148 points in 48 minutes at home, and they did it in the old-fashioned way with some of the worst defense the association has ever witnessed. So now, allegedly, reportedly, all hell is breaking loose. According to Jason Lloyd of The Athletic, LeBron is, quote, privately acknowledging to those around him that the team's situation is, quote, the worst it has been since he returned, end quote. But of course, you know the old saying, you can't win an NBA championship in January, so give these guys some time. They'll sort it out. Even better, they've had a few days between Saturday's humiliation and tonight's game against the Spurs, so it was time to call a team meeting before yesterday's practice. Now, I like that. That's a really good idea. It's a roster of NBA champions and all-stars and veterans. So you get these guys all in the same room, along with their head coach, Ty Lue, and their GM, Kobe Altman. They'll hammer this thing out. Again, this is what veteran teams do. They'll get together, they'll hash it out, it'll be fine. That's not what happened. Instead of hammering it out, they just hammered each other, allegedly. More to the point, a bunch of them hammered Kevin Love. According to Woj, quote, several players challenged the legitimacy of Kevin Love's illness that led him to leave Saturday's loss to Oklahoma City early and miss Sunday's practice, end quote. Yeah, I'm sorry, what? I never want to tell anybody to hit the panic button, but if you have reached accusing teammate of faking an illness to get out of a game stage, then it's full-blown panic time, especially when you gave up nearly a buck and a half in one game, nearly 150 points in a single game at home. So I didn't think things could get any worse than when the Cavs lost to the T-Wolves and the Raptors by a combined 62 points 2 weeks back. But I was wrong. So wrong. Because then they lost to Golden State by 10 last Monday, and then unnamed players immediately ran right to the media to complain about all the problems on the roster. That felt like rock bottom. But then yesterday, they broke out their jackhammers and they went to work. According to Woj, quote, several players were pushing for the Cavaliers management and coaching staff to hold Love accountable for leaving the arena before the end of Saturday's game and then missing Sunday's practice, end quote. Woj went on, the meeting was loud and intense, only calming down once Love spoke to those gathered in the room and explained himself, end quote. Here's the bottom line. I don't know whether or not Kevin Love was sick or wasn't sick, but I know if guys are accusing him of faking being sick, then all of them are jacked up. Every week, it seems like somebody new is to blame in Cleveland. It's an obvious sign of a team ripping apart. One week, it's Ty Lue. The next week, it's Isaiah Thomas. Now it's Kevin Love. Now, I'm not going to say Love is perfect. Not by any stretch. But he's playing a new position, and all he's done is be as productive as he's ever been in Cleveland. Again, I don't know if this guy's healthy or not, but if that report is true, that locker room is terminally ill. Forget the fact they gave up nearly 150 in a regulation game. If they're doing this, if this is a fact, that roster needs immediate surgery and a transfusion. Stat. And for all the names that are being thrown around right now, DeAndre Jordan, Lou Williams, Kemba Walker, the list goes on and on. I don't know that there's one trade, or even two, that makes them a championship contender. But it's starting to look like they're going to have to make some sort of deal, or they're going to end up killing each other before the end of the season. And the Cavs' pitch to LeBron to get him to stay could not be going any worse. Never mind LeBron. At this point, do any of them want to be there? I want to hear from the land. We are joined now by Tom Verducci. Tom, it's good to have you back. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good, good. All right, so Tom, the members of the Hall of Fame class of 2018, as I mentioned, will be announced tomorrow. I don't want to ask you who you voted for, but can you take me through your process when it does come to the voting? What criteria do you use? In other words, what makes somebody a Hall of Fame player in your mind?
Well, for me, I like to see a decent peak period of a career, generally 8 to 10 years, where you're among the best at your position in your era. And I also like to see some longevity. You know, it doesn't mean you have to have 3,000 hits or 500 home runs or 300 wins. But the last, you know, a good 15 to 20 years, that's pretty much what you see at a Hall of Famers. And then recently, the last two decades or so, anybody that I think has been publicly connected to steroids, I'm talking about evidence, not innuendo or rumor, but public evidence of steroid connection, steroid use, you're not getting my vote today, tomorrow, next year, ever.
You know, you've been pretty clear about that, Tom, so lay that out for me as well. I mean, the arguments are pretty tricky. In terms of PED users, how have you approached this, and how will you approach this going forward?
A couple of ways, Jim. Number one, I'm going to use the same standards that I would use in journalism. In other words, there has to be enough evidence for me to go out there and believe that somebody used steroids and to stand behind it. For instance, if I hear rumors about a player and I never wrote it while I heard the rumors, well, that tells me there's not enough evidence to make a decision like that. So that's one thing. And you know, it's also, to me, almost I equate it to sitting on a jury. You know, this is not a criminal case. Nobody's going to jail. We're talking about the Hall of Fame. You're keeping your record. You're keeping your money. You're keeping everything you did in the game. This is about honoring the very best of the game. And for me, and sitting on a jury, I have to take in every piece of evidence that I can. I do not dismiss evidence because it's too difficult to deal with. I mean, that's like being called to jury duty and throwing up your hands and saying, this case is too tough. I'm out of here. Give me an easy case. Well, no, it's not easy, but you're in charge of making a decision. As long as you bring certain standards on a case-by-case basis, you know, whatever your position is, I don't have a problem with it, but that's mine. There's no way. I understand why guys use steroids. I will not and cannot condone and honor that decision.
Tom Verducci joining us. You know, to your point, Tom, it's sometimes not fun. It's sometimes not easy. Overall, in filling out that ballot, is it something you look forward to, or is it something typically that you really wrestle with and maybe even stress over?
Well, there's definitely some wrestling going on. I mean, for me, I do a lot of research. I like to put together a whole book line of each guy the first year they come on the ballot and then sort of revisit it because other people can have a different perspective than me on a lot of different players, steroid use or not. So it is evolving. It is fluid. But it's very difficult. I don't take it lightly. I put a lot of work into it. I do look forward to it. You know, again, it's difficult, but I look forward to it because it's the highest honor anybody can get in the game. I will say a lot of the discussions about the PED use have really changed things. And what I'm seeing now, Jim, is people who were in middle school when the steroid era was raging are now voting on those players. You know, that's how much time has passed. And I think as time has gone by, the insidiousness of that era has sort of waned. And a lot of people who had posters on the wall of these guys in the 90s are now voting, and they don't realize what that climate was like. So, for instance, you have Bonds and Clemens getting, you know, 50 to 60% of the total vote. But in the last 2 years, they're getting 90% of the first-time voters. So you can see that there is a path for those guys to get in the Hall of Fame, although it has to happen in the next 3-4 years.
Right, I was going to say, Tom, so time is not necessarily on their side, but is it working in their favor? In other words, they may never get your vote, but do you think those two guys will get enough votes?
It's going to be difficult because the more the mountain gets steeper, the higher you climb, right? And I think picking up votes now, as opposed to, say, 2 or 3 years from now, it's going to be more difficult. I don't think that the changeover I mentioned with first-time voters I don't think there's enough votes per se there. They need people to change their minds on an issue that's very polarizing. You know, for instance, this year, half the ballots have been revealed, about 200 ballots. They've picked up only two net votes from people who voted last year. So is there enough time? You know, I say it's going to come down to their 10th year because people do a real hard examination, even harder when somebody's on a ballot for a last time. And I think that's what we'll come down to.
The Daily Jungle is brought to you by America's Best Racing. America's Best Racing, the website and app. Their app is updated. It's better. It's faster. And it's offering new prizes, including the grand prize of $1 million. Search for Stay Lucky in the App Store and download it. The app is free. It's easy to download and it's free to play. You don't even have to leave home. Play in your living room, your car, your office, wherever. Build a winning streak and win prizes. Pick 20 consecutive winners and you can win $1 million. Horse racing fans, you know this sound. Now get ready. Now get to know their app. In the App Store, it's called Stay Lucky. Search and download it today. The Daily Jungle is brought to you by Kalo. Kalo Rings, now one of our sponsors. And they're made from silicone. They're made from silicone, and they are perfect for when you can't wear your traditional wedding rings. I see athletes, military members, and construction workers, even mechanics, all wearing them. You can find one in every color, and they have them both for men and for women. Find them at Dick's Sporting Goods, Bass Pro Shops, Academy Sports, or online at Kalo.com. That's Q-A-L-O.com. That's Kalo. Now it's back to our Daily Jungle. Tom Verducci joining us for a few more moments. All right, Trevor Hoffman came very close to being inducted last year. You did vote for him at that time. In your mind, what makes him a Hall of Famer?
Well, I look at him as sort of like the Tim Raines of closing. You know, Tim Raines wasn't Ricky Henderson, but who was? You know, Hoffman's not Mariano Rivera, but who was? Nobody. Think about this, Jim. To me, the most valuable currency in the game is the team win. Nothing is more important than the team winning. And Trevor Hoffman, other than Mariano, was asked to preserve a win more than any pitcher who ever lived. And I realize the save stat by itself is flawed. I get it. And I realize you can have guys pop up from time to time and save 30 games a year or two, maybe 3 years. But there's nobody other than Mariano who did it for as long and as well as Trevor Hoffman. He's a true outlier when it comes to that job. So, listen, I think he's going to get in this year. It's going to be a very close vote. It'll be right around that 75% threshold, but he's got my vote.
Tom Verducci, my guest. Tom, what about the case of Edgar Martinez? Now, he got nearly 60% of the vote last year. How do you go about evaluating a DH? Because he did not play in the field, is there a higher standard for him?
Yes, there is. It's not a position. You know, this was something that was invented in 1973 because the American League offense was terrible and their attendance was cratering. So they needed more offense in the game. You know, it's not true baseball because you can just hit. You don't even have to own a baseball glove to play baseball. I get it. So I'm not saying it's not a job, but it's less of a job than playing defense, you know, every half inning, which you didn't have to do. So the standards have to be higher. That being said, this guy put up monster years doing, you know, the DH job for the Seattle Mariners. And one of the things I got to tell you that swayed me, and this is hard to quantify, in fact, I can't quantify it, is how many pitchers told me he was among the best hitters they ever faced. And certainly that's number one on the list of a guy like Mariano Rivera. So that tells me a lot, the respect of his peers. He does have the numbers, maybe not the longevity because he got started late, but the respect of the pitchers who faced him, to me, really caught my attention.
Tom Verducci, my guest. Tom, really quickly before I let you go, what do you make of the free agent market? Not a whole lot of movement this offseason. Are there ongoing discussions, and what do you make of what you've seen so far?
There's a lot of things at play here. Number one, the players absolutely got crushed in the last CBA because that soft cap has been stiffened. Talking about the luxury tax threshold, you've got the Dodgers and the Yankees, and essentially the Giants checked out of free agency because they want to reset their tax rate. You know, they made some changes to that tax program that stiffened the cap. It's working out a lot harder than I think the players anticipated when they agreed to it. So that's one thing. You've got about 8 to 10 teams that are in complete rebuild mode following the line of the Cubs and the Astros, so that takes a lot of those teams out of play. And also, it's not a great free agent class. And I think the biggest valuation to me is the way that these general managers now are all operating under the same amount of information. It's a lot. Listen, 5-10 years ago, we were ripping teams for making emotional investments and giving players 7-10 year contracts and saying that guy's never going to be worth it. Well, now these guys do have all the information that says it's not worth it. And the way manager, general managers evaluate it now is how efficiently they run the teams, not how well they write a checkbook. There's nothing driving the game more than that, the intellect in the front offices, and I think they've come to realize that paying a guy for the decline of his career rather than the prime of his career is just fool's gold. So I think teams have gotten a lot smarter. But I will say this, Jim, let's be cautious about making sweeping generalizations, because next year when you've got Harper and Machado and possibly Kershaw in the market, we'll be singing a different tune, because those are franchise-changing players. And people will be lined up in an auction atmosphere to try to get them signed.
No doubt. Then a quick follow, Tom, before you go. Of the guys you mentioned, a Harper, a Machado, a Kershaw, do you see any of them moving sooner than later before they hit the market?
No, I don't. I think those teams have to play it out with them. I think there's a chance that Machado could be moved in July if the Orioles are, you know, that far out of it. But you know, he means so much to that franchise, and Peter Angelos has never been one to really pull the plug on a team too early. He does it too late, if anything. So it's hard for me to imagine the Orioles will be hopelessly out of it after 3 months of play. Maybe that happens, and maybe he's out there, but I think they'll play it out, all three of those guys.
All right, here comes Philly fan. Let's go to Philadelphia, Terrence in Philly. It's good to have you, Terrence. How are you?
Hey, folks, how are you today?
We're great. How about you, Terrence?
Fantastic, because my Eagles are going to do to the Patriots what was done to Rome. I'm correct. Did not Rome burn? Well, the Eagles defense are going to light a fire and crush Tom Brady, the refs, and the Patriots.
My man, you were going with a lot of metaphors to make your point. All right, Terrence, thank you very much. What happened to Rome? Didn't Rome burn? Anyway,
burning.
Hey, listen, it's always good to get a history lesson during the program. I like that. You know the lesson I'm getting? There are new viewers to the program. There are people who do not know this show, but they hear me or some national host that they think is me talking about their team and they want to jump in there. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of connection to how you folks doing. Who are you talking to? Which folks? The XR4TI, this morning zoo that you think I'm doing, or everybody in TV land. How you folks doing? We folks are awesome. Listen, I'm never going to bite the hand that feeds. Terrence, I appreciate you. I appreciate the call, and I appreciate you saying what's going to happen to the Patriots. But there is something unique. When you've done this as long as I've done this, it's hard to find people that don't really know the show or haven't heard it. I've done this for a quarter of a century. I've done this nationally for a quarter of a century. I love that. I mean, that to me struck me as a guy that didn't really know the show but found it on CBS Sports Network, and we're talking about his team. I love it. Love it. So to answer your question, Terrence, we folks are awesome. Having a great time with it. I'm looking for Eagle fans, not because I need you, but because a Patriot fan called this show and called you out and said, where are you? Where are the Eagle fans? It was Christian in Maine. Let's keep it right there in Philadelphia. This may as well just be all Eagle radio. I'm getting phone calls from Philly. Lots of calls. Al in Philadelphia, you're next. Let's go back-to-back Philadelphia. Good to have you, Al. You're on. How are you?
Hey, Jim Rome. How you doing, man?
Good, man. I'm great, Al. How about you?
Man, I'm fantastic. Fantastic. Let me tell you something about that guy, Christian in Maine. What he don't understand is he don't understand passion, which turns into invincibility. When you become invincible like we've been through these playoffs, everybody doubted us. Everybody shut us down. Everybody shut us out. What he's going to notice in Minnesota in 2 weeks is when we got 40,000 people in the stands, the Eagles are going to think they're home.
They travel. Now, if you can get 40,000 tickets to a Super Bowl game, Al, that'd be pretty awesome. But like I said, they're coming to that town. I know Eagle fan is coming to the town. Now, whether or not they can throw down and get Super Bowl ducats is something else. I know they're coming, and I know some of them will be in that house. You know, you started that phone call by saying, let me tell you what Christian in Maine doesn't understand. Let me tell you something. Christian Maine doesn't understand a lot of things. A lot of things. You know how I know? Because I know Christian Maine. He calls this program. But I also know Philly is coming in. Eagle fan is coming in. I'm telling you, they're in a great spot. They love this. That's that town. That's that fabric of that town. They love that underdog role. Bring it. Come at us. The best thing that could have happened was them being a one seed. And then Atlanta being a six seed. I mean, Atlanta of all teams. The team that choked away a 25-point lead in the Super Bowl was a favorite as a six on the road against a one. Eagle fan loved that. They beat them down. Then they deal with Minnesota coming into their house, and they're still dogs. And Chris Long is rocking a dog mask. The entire town is in on this. And then they beat them down. I mean, hospital job, beat down. And then they open up as a 5.5-point dog. I mean, this is better. This is so good for Philly fan. This is who Philly fan is. This is where they live. They love this. Keep coming. I'm going to keep it in Philadelphia. Hey, listen, let me tell you something. I could probably go the rest of this show and next hour by banging Philadelphia phone calls. I love it. This makes three in a row from Philadelphia. Ken in Philly. It's great to have you on the show, Ken. How are you?
Hey, Jim. It's great to be on the show. I'm not Chris Everett, so treat me nice.
You got it. You're all good.
So my response to the dude up there in Maine, his name is irrelevant to me, is that Patriots fans are frauds. 20 years ago when the Patriots were terrible, they were giving away patch tickets with every grinder at the Packy. Now the Patriots win Super Bowls every year, and now all of a sudden they drive halfway to Providence to go see games. When the Patriots think again, they'll be fourth in that trash city behind the Celtics, the Bruins, and the Red Sox.
Ken in Philly, rack him. All right, Ken, so you probably don't know the show that well. Not if you're referencing the Everett incident from 25 years ago. That's all right, though. When I said rack him, that means I'm saving that phone call. We keep the phone call at the end of the day. This is something I did way, way, way back in the day where I tried to get the callers to compete. Victor Oladipo is my guest. Victor, good to have you back. How are you?
How are you?
Good, good, great. Nice to talk to you. I mentioned you were coming off that win over San Antonio. You know, they had only lost two games at home all season long. So let me start here. What's it say about your team that you go into a really tough place to play at the end of a five-game trip and you're able to come out with the win the way you did?
It just shows our resiliency. I mean, towards the end of the trip, you know, we dropped two tough games, road games, and winnable games, and it was tough. But to be able to bounce back in a tough environment and beat a great team in a great environment shows our resiliency and shows what type of team we can be.
You know, back in the offseason when you were dealt to Indiana in that Paul George deal, there was some doubt as to whether or not the Pacers got good value in return. After what you and the team have done so far this season, nobody's saying that now. Now, I can make the argument that you've improved every place you've been, so it's not completely unexpected for you to improve once you arrive with the Pacers, but it seems to me you've taken your game to a whole new level. What's been the biggest key for this huge step for you?
I think it's a little bit of everything. I think my experience with my past, obviously, you know, and being in Orlando and OKC has definitely helped me and helped me become the man and the player that I am here in Indiana. It kind of helped me be in this role that I am in now. And obviously the opportunity here, them believing in me and my ability, obviously helps as well. And I just got to go out there and play and play my game, be myself, and go out there and do whatever it takes to help my team win. And you put all those aspects and those things together, then good things happen. So I'm just happy where I am now, and I got to continue to keep working so I can make the most of it and be where I need to be.
Victor Oladipo, my guest, key phrase, I just got to keep working, because the fact is in the offseason, you work like crazy to get into even better shape. You were working out three times a day in Miami. You've always been a workhorse, so what was it that made you want to work even harder this past offseason?
I just realized I need to invest in my body and my mind. And in order to be great, you got to work at a great intensity and at a high level. That's what I'm striving to do. I'm chasing number one, like I always say. And I'm trying to be the best. In order to do that, I got to work. My mentality was, you know, just prepare myself for any situation possible that I may be put in this year, both physically and mentally, and that's what I tried to do. And, you know, the year is far from over, so still got a lot of work to do, but I'm prepared for it.
So when you say you're chasing number one, what do you mean by that? Are you chasing your best version of you, or is it something else?
My best version of me and whoever's the best. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to be the best. In order to be the best, you got to
we got to beat the best. And that's what I'm focused on. That's what I'm looking forward to. And just got to continue to keep working so I can get there.
Victor Oladipo joins us. Now, the NBA All-Star reserves are going to be announced today. And with the year you're having, you're getting a lot of run as a potential All-Star. So how are you approaching the next few hours? I mean, are you glued to social media? Are you on the edge of your seat when the announcements are made? Or do you basically just ignore the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, I can't really control it, so I'm not really concerned about it. We got a game tomorrow. We'll play Phoenix, so I got to watch film and get ready for that game. And I'm sure people will let me know when it happens. So.
All right, so you're focused on the game. I get this. It's not about you. But what would it mean to you to be named an All-Star, especially back home?
It would mean a lot to me, you know, definitely, to be able to represent the Indiana Pacers as an All-Star. It would mean a lot, you know what I mean? And just be able to go out there and represent this city would be a blessing. And still got a lot of work to do, still got a lot of room to grow. And I just thank my teammates for giving me that opportunity, because without them, none of this would have been possible. And I just got to continue to keep working and getting better, because I haven't even scratched the surface of how good I really feel like I can be. So just got to keep working.
You know, of course, you played your college ball at IU, which I mentioned at the very top. We all know this. But your former teammates in the NBA have said that when they watch you right now, they feel like you are home. Has coming back to Indiana felt like a homecoming to you?
Yeah, it did, definitely. I mean, I played 3 years here, a lot of great memories here. I'm familiar with the area, familiar with the fans. So being here definitely felt like playing in front of my family every day and coming back home and playing. So to be able to represent, you know, the Indiana Pacers here has been a blessing, and just got to continue to make the most of it.
Vic, one last thing I want to ask you about, because, I mean, not only have you done a great job on the floor for them, it seems like you've been a huge addition in terms of their culture and their vibe. Here's why I say this. Nate McMillan said, quote, "I guess Victor has bad days, but I've never seen them. We've been down a lot of games this season, but you look at Victor in the huddle, he's always the same. That calmness has helped us along with his play, and he's just got an infectious personality. I mean, the singing," end quote. Listen, how do you explain that mental approach such that maybe you're having a bad day, but nobody knows it, and you never let that bother you or impact the team? What's your approach in that regard?
I mean, just having an even keel. I mean, just being the same way every day. Even keel, not getting too high, not getting too low. I watched that, got that from Kobe. I mean, just being consistent. I mean, anything is possible, right? So no matter what situation you're in, I've been in. You know, I've been there before, so. There's nothing that I feel like I can't get out of. So if we down in a game, you know, I'm going to have that same mentality, because we've been down before and we've come back and won. So I'm going to stay positive. You know, they say, like, the game ain't over till the last buzz or the fat lady sings, right? So that's my mentality. I'm the same way every day, because I wanted to build that consistency on and off the court. In order to do that, you got to have the same approach and that same even keel. So that's what I focus on doing.
Yeah, it's not over until the fat lady sings or until you start singing. We've talked about it in the past. Now, you've got – how have your new teammates responded to your voice? Do they appreciate your vocal abilities?
I think so. I mean, we got some guys in here who do music like Lance already anyway. So it's funny, because I feel like everybody sings all the time now on this team. So it's definitely infectious. Nothing like this song, you know.
No, exactly. No, you're right. You're right. So now you've got everybody doing it. Is there anybody pushing you? Is there anybody even close to your ability as a singer, your level as a singer?
No. I don't think so.
Let's not get crazy with that.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, how do I even ask that question, Vic? What am I thinking? So let's talk about Eagle fan. Better yet, why don't we talk for a minute about Viking fan and what they're dealing with? Because it seems to me the only thing worse than getting waxed 38-7 in the NFC title game is getting waxed 38-7 in the NFC title game and having your bully chase you all the way home afterwards. And this is what's happening in Minnesota right now. The Minneapolis Miracle is now officially the Minneapolis Nightmare, because Philadelphia took a 2x4 to the Vikings grill and smacked them from the link straight back to the 6-1-2. And now, when the entire state of Minnesota comes out of the coma next week, guess who's going to be standing above their hospital bed? Freaking Philly fan. It's a bad deal. Imagine getting your ass kicked in front of everybody you know, and then having that dude, that tuned you up over for dinner every single night for seven straight days. That's the Minneapolis nightmare. And frankly, I'm not sure you Minnesotans are built for this. I think you might be too nice. As an example, listen to these Viking fans who just stepped off their bird last night, getting back from that Sunday slaughter. Some cruel field reporter from the local NBC affiliate shoved a camera in these sad puppies' faces and rolled tape on their reaction.
We had some friends who had their hats taken off and thrown in the urinals and urinated on.
One that was walking down to his seat and pushed down, punched in the face on the, he was laying on the ground.
A lot of random acts of violence.
I don't mind losing, but if the people are going to be that bad, I'm not going to go.
Usually it's like 90% good people, 10% bad, and this is completely reversed. 10% good, 90% bad.
They gave it up. They didn't give what they...
All right, so what that is, those are all Viking fans that were at the game. And that was their experience with Philly Fan. These are all people who have to host Philly Fan for a week. Those people. People who went to the link for an NFC Championship game, and they're in shock that they were not welcomed like they were family. Now, again, I want to be very, very clear. I don't condone ripping off a dude's lid, chucking it into the jaw, and urinating all over it and the puck that's in there. Nor do I condone really any violence at all. But the fact that Viking fan is dead stunned that this kind of stuff happened to them tells you everything you need to know about them, not Philly fan. I mean, this happens pretty much in every stadium, right? Again, I don't condone violence in any way. I don't ever want to be like, you know, I don't want to go to the stadium. I don't want to go to the game because I'm afraid somebody's going to rip my lid off and then stick it in the urinal and urinate on it. But it happens in a lot of places. In fact, I'm going to say most places, not just Philly. But we know this. And we know it could happen in Philly. Everybody knew that, except apparently Viking fan. Now, Minnesota, take that as a compliment. What I'm saying is you might just be too damn nice for all this noise. Only a Viking fan would come back from an away game and be absolutely aghast at what they saw and what they experienced. And I do get it. I get it. You see, if the Vikings, if you turn this thing on its head, if the Vikings hosted that game last Sunday, they'd probably invite every Philly fan walking by to join them in their tailgate. They'd ask them, how you doing? How's your stay been so far? Hey, let me recommend some local spots to you. And then after that game, if the Vikings won 38-7, if the Vikings won, they'd probably tell Philly fan, hey, great season. Don't sweat that. Wentz will be back, and so will you. Have a safe flight home. And if you're ever in town, you've got a place to stay. But now it's different. Now that they've had that experience. Now that they've had that beat down. Now that they've got that taste in their mouth. Now that famous Midwest manners, those famous Midwest manners are going to be put to test. The toughest test ever. And I'm going to be right there in the eye of the storm next week to see how these two groups, very different groups, are able to coexist, if they can at all. This was going to be the biggest party in NFL history for seven straight days. Now it's going to be the greatest social experiment of all time. Do Midwest folk have a boiling point? We're going to find out now. And I don't think there's any better suited group to act as the agitator, freaking Philly fan. Eagles-Pats is now the undercard to the main event. Midwest manners versus 1 week of Philly fan. Please and thank you versus shut up and bleep you. I mean, it might be the most evenly matched contest ever. Vegas has opened up the line as pick 'em. Only question left, who you got? Who you got? Midwest manners versus Eagle fan. Because we know Eagle fan is coming. They'll be there. Sam McGuffey is my guest. Sam, it's great to have you on today. How are you?
Good. How you doing?
Good, Sam. There's so many things that I could talk to you about that I want to talk to you about. But first off, I got to ask, what's it feel like when you hear yourself introduced as a member of the U.S. Olympic bobsled team?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. You know, every year they name a national team, and it's kind of cool to be part of the Olympic team. So. Yeah.
There's that, but if you go back a little bit, I mean, when you were a high school football player in Texas and you became a viral sensation for one absurd run after another, I mean, you were hurdling guys, generally making defensive players look pretty foolish. Some of these videos, I mean, they weren't from games. And then you have the one where you run at somebody, and then you do this forward flip over them. I'm talking really absurd stuff. So go back to that time. When those highlights started to blow up and you became a national name, what was that like?
It was pretty crazy. I mean, I was only like 17 years old, and then, you know, that was before, which I tell people I was before my time, because, you know, it was kind of like all that viral stuff, YouTube and all that stuff. It was before, you know, how it is today. It's, you know, it's so much different, but yeah. Pretty wild.
No, dude, you're way ahead of your time. You were way ahead of your time. And then you play football in Michigan, and then Rice, mm-hmm. where you had an excellent career. And then on top of that, you compete in the heptathlon at the Conference USA Indoor Championships. You finished third. Like, so when you look back on your career, your college career, both in football and track, what do you remember most?
Just that first game in Michigan. I was just a freshman. I was about 180 pounds. And just starting, I started the first game. So it's kind of crazy. You know, that was Rich Rodriguez's first year. So, pretty wild.
Sam McGuffey, especially when you do things like that against Notre Dame. And then, listen, I'm covering a lot of ground quickly because you've got this diverse resume, but then you spend some time with the Raiders, the Cardinals, the Patriots, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and then your time in Winnipeg is over. At that point, what were you thinking about your future as an athlete?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, you know, I'm still fast. I'm still in best shape of my life. You know, I feel like I could continue doing something, and I was on a mission to figure that out. So, you know, just trying different things and see what worked, you know.
Sam McGuffey, my guest. Then the story goes, one of your track coaches at Rice suggested that you look into bobsledding. So when that first came up, bobsledding, what was your reaction, and how familiar were you with the bobsled at that time?
I wasn't. All I know is you push a sled and you jump in. That's basically what I.
That's all you knew about it. That's all you knew about it. So when it came out, so that you push the sled, you jump in. Did you think, yo man, that sounds like a really good idea? Or were you thinking, yeah, I'm not gonna really be about that? Like, what went through your mind when you first heard the idea?
It looks so smooth, the ride's real smooth and everything, but it's not. It's totally different. It's literally like being put in a garbage can and then just being kicked down a flight of stairs. That's kind of what it's like.
All right. So then you stood. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. It's just wild. It's violent. You know, it's like being kind of like a riding a roller coaster and they haven't checked the maintenance on it for 10 years. That's kind of what it's like.
All right, so that is wild. So now you're the brake man. So after the big push at the very top, you jump in. So what is that run like? I mean, you just touched on that. But what's the run like? And then when you're in the middle of the race, can you tell how fast you're going and how clean that run has been?
Yeah, I can tell if it's a clean run or not. You know, I can tell if it's fast. If we came into an entrance early on a turn or we came off late, stuff like that.
Now, you didn't know much about it, and you had to get up to speed pretty quickly. Like, there's a guy named Brian Scheimer. He was a U.S. bobsled legend, and he was pumped when he heard that you might be interested in the bobsled. When you arrived, you had a day with him to learn as much as you could about the bobsled. What was that one day like?
With who? Sorry.
With Scheimer. With Brian Scheimer.
Oh, yeah. He's just like, hey, you're going to hit the sled, and you're going to push it, and you're going to just do it as fast as you can. So I'm like, all right, and basically, you know, he's a five-time Olympian, I'm pretty sure, so as a pilot.
So you get that day with him. Let me ask you this. There was some adversity, though. I mean, you made the U.S. bobsled team for 2015-16. Then you suffered a hand injury. What happened, and what was the damage?
Yeah, if we can – I'm on Jim Rome, so I'm like
play through
so, yeah,
it, my man.
My fingers off, basically.
Whoa, 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 whoa. Sam, what'd you just say? What was the injury?
Yeah, I chopped my fingers off. So I was loading the sled, and basically just, you know, it came off too fast, and we're trying to load it onto the dock, and I just chopped my fingers off, basically. The middle of my fingers, the tips of them. So they call me Sammy No Fingers.
Come on, Sam, like a figure of speech, right? You didn't really lose digits, right?
No,
you
didn't... I didn't lose like the whole thing, just the tips. So.
Just the tips.
Yeah.
Bro, if you're okay with them calling you Sammy No Fingers, you got a pretty good sense of humor, man. That sounds really scary. That sounds really bad. Yeah. Like, how did you come back from an injury like that?
Just healed. I didn't do a lot of anything. Kind of hard to do anything. Just because my fingers, if I touched anything, it was just like, they're all gushing. So, yeah.
So what's it like right now? Do you have feel?
I don't have that much feeling in my middle fingers. It's like real sensitive. So,
Sam McGuffey, dude, that sounds like a really terrifying thing. I mean, so you have competed on the big stage in college football. You have competed internationally before. You've paid a really significant price in that injury. Do you have any idea what it's going to be like to compete for the United States at the Olympics?
I have no idea. You know, I've played in front of 114,000 people at Michigan, but, you know, this is another deal. This is the whole world's watching instead of just, you know, people in America. So,
well, listen, yeah. As your football background, I know that you've probably learned that you're not going to worry about things you can't control. You're not going to look past what's right in front of you. But have you allowed yourself to think what it might feel like to medal at the Olympics on the world stage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that'd be amazing. That would be amazing. I really can't imagine it, actually. I mean, it's crazy. It's going to be in Korea and everything, with all the stuff going on over there. But yeah, it'd be pretty awesome. We could.
Sam, you got this amazing opportunity ahead of you. What's going on today, man? You got some family, you got some friends. Where are you at right now?
Oh, I'm on the team bus. We just picked up. We went to Under Armour headquarters in Baltimore. Picked up our gear. Now we're on the bus, headed back to DC. Just about to fly back. Fly to, I think, Calgary. Get some training in, and then head off to Korea.
Love it.
But I'm on the bus right now, so that's why it's kind of loud. I'm trying to tell people to be quiet. But.
Hey, Sam, it's not a problem at all. Some of my favorite interviews, I've done this a long time, some of my favorite interviews are on the bus. So way to play through it. You got an amazing story. It was great to watch you back then, and we'll all be following you once you get there. So good luck with that, and really nice to have you on the show, Sam.
Thank you. I'm a big, huge fan of yours. So, yeah.
Me
Thanks
too.
Thanks for having me.
Great job, Sam. You got it. Go get it. And if you missed yesterday's show, then you missed a lot. Because yesterday on live TV and live radio, I did take a giant bite out of a neon orange habanero pepper. But before we get there, I want to reset why I did that, why I took that bite out of that neon orange habanero pepper. It's because there is a cause behind it, and the cause is extremely important. Friend of the show, Tom Haberstroh, his mother Patty was diagnosed with ALS late last year. So Tom and his family decided to resurrect that ice bucket challenge, something a lot of us also did back at the time, to raise money and awareness in the hopes of finding a cure. Except they did not bring back the ice bucket challenge. As the ice bucket challenge, they kind of went next level with it, and they brought it back as the ALS pepper challenge. Same idea, except instead of getting a bucket of water dumped over your head, you have to take a bite out of a flaming hot pepper, and you have your choice. Jalapeno, serrano, chili, or in my case, the neon orange habanero. So, how did the challenge work its way back to me? Turns out, Charles Barkley did it, and he nominated Jason Whitlock. Jason Whitlock did it, and he nominated me. So, when I found out about this, I was back in New York for my NFL Today spot on CBS, which meant that Adam Hawk had to do my grocery shopping for me. Now, keep in mind, this is my EP. My executive producer, my trusted right-hand man when it comes to the radio program. So what does Hawk do? Hawk's gonna hawk. He skips over the jalapenos and goes right to the habanero. In fact, this dude had the stones to text me a picture of the pepper with the caption, "Godspeed," right below it. Hey, Hawk. Listen, and I'll even say on the air what I said to Hawk when I brought him in. Hey, whatever you do, I don't want a sycophant. I don't want somebody to yes me. I don't want somebody to tell me what they think I want to hear. I want you to tell me what you think. I want you to find a way to make me and this show better. So don't yes me. At the same time, Hawk, let's not forget who you work for. All right, so what are you trying to do? It would stand to reason, Hawk, if something bad happened to me, something bad's going to happen to you, at least your career, right? You're invested in me and the show. Are you literally trying to kill your host on live TV and live radio? I mean, you've done some really stupid things, But picking up a habanero from whatever market you live near for me to eat on camera may be one of the dumbest things you've ever done. And that's saying something because you are the guy who got a life-size cat tat 9 days ago. So, yesterday, I thought it would be a lot of fun. I couldn't wait to do it because the cause is so important. And Tom Haverstraw is such a stand-up guy. And I know people dealing with ALS. It's horrific. It is a horrific disease. I know really, really good people who've been afflicted. So I couldn't wait to take part in this. But I gotta admit, I was not really clued in to what the habanero was all about until you clones started to call me and tweet at me. Anyone with a cell signal was warning me, coast to coast, Rome, this is a really significant cause, but you don't want to do this. Not the habanero. Don't touch that pepper. And then when I did, I picked it up like, I'm going to do this thing right now. This guy immediately hit me with, Rome, you touched it. You touched it. Don't touch your eyes. Don't touch your junk. Don't touch anything. Literally, I was getting an email like that and a call like that. So, and also, Rome, now is not the time to man up. Bow out. And if you're going to do it, here's how you do it. Chase it with bread, warm water, melon fruits. Even Tom himself, when he came on, offered no comfort. None.
The drool effect is very real, but I would say that it's not exclusive just to your mouth. Your nose and your eyeballs are going to probably drool a little bit too. That for me particularly, I needed a Kleenex nearby because there's a lot of crying going on, not just from sadness about what's going on in your body, but just the reaction itself. You kind of just start sneezing and drooling out your eyeballs. So definitely have some like tissues or a towel, maybe a bath towel nearby. You might need it for the sweat too.
I drool. So at this point, I'm not going to lie. Now I'm locked in. We've had the thing on camera. It's a really important cause. There's no way out. And I didn't know what I signed up for necessarily. And I'm not one of those super spicy guys. I like some spice, but not an orange habanero. So I'm not going to lie to you. I'm a little bit nervous at this point. And then you got Hawk. Hawk went from thinking, hey, this is really funny. This is a, quote, funny bit, to legitimately wondering if he's going to be on staff beyond that day. But there was a significant cause hanging in the balance. And you can call me whatever you want. You can say what you want about this show. But you can't call me a punk. Not when it comes to the habanero. So, if you missed it yesterday, here it is once again. The ALS Pepper Challenge as completed by yours truly, Jim Rome, live on TV and radio yesterday. Me on an orange habanero pepper. Delicious. May I have another? That thing is hot, yo. Literally, my esophagus is on fire. Yo, that's hot. You see my eyes tearing right now? That's a real deal. Fuck, you idiot. That thing is hot. Cheers, y'all. Rome 1, habanero nothing. Scoreboard, bitch. Yeah, I'd love to sit here and say that was nothing at all and that I handled that thing like a boss, but that was not nothing at all. After the show, here's what happened after the show. I was telling the staff that I felt like I was on drugs. My eyes were drooling. My head was spinning. My center of gravity was off. I mean, way off. My entire esophagus was an inferno. All these things were going on for like 20 minutes. So that definitely was not nothing. Don't let Stone Face Fan Smack from yesterday fool you. That pepper had a mule kick to it. But again, I couldn't be happier to have done it because the cause is important. If you want to get involved, check out Tom Haverstraw's Twitter page. He has a link to the challenge and a place where you can donate to ALS Research, pinned to the top of his profile. And he made a really important point yesterday. ALS is not incurable. It's simply underfunded. And if you're listening on the radio today and you want to see the video and you missed it, me going toe-to-toe with the habanero and not blinking, hit my Twitter feed, scroll back. One phone line's open. Let's go to Denver. Dan in Denver. Hey, Dan, how are you?
I'm good, Rome. Thanks for the vine. Tattoos have been a topic in the jungle lately. I wanted to weigh in. I get wanting to get you, the best in the biz, inked on you, but the XR4TI, come on now. Nick Foles in a Super Bowl thinks that looks out of place. Let me break this down, Rome. We've got Keith Arnold in the back corner there, looking like Chael Sonnen without the steroids. Congrats on your win against Rampage Saturday. I didn't catch it, though, because it was on Paramount Network. It's one thing to be on tape delay. It's another thing to be on tape delay on Paramount Network. And, Rome, is there any particular reason Alvy can't stop looking at the camera when they pan to the XR4TI? Dude looks like a tourist at Disney posing there. I can't tell if he's supposed to be there or if he's just photobombing your live shot. He's like Nick Saban at an on-field post-game presser. Super creepy. But, Rome, I'm a huge fan of that other guy back there. What's his name? Dallas Huff? Dallas is the rare guy who could be on TV daily and somehow be less famous than when he was just on radio. Since making the jump to TV, Dallas has lost his blue check and about half his followers on Twitter. Dude's actually starting to tweet the show to try to get recognized by the crew. And then there's Hawk. Hey, Hawk, Kyle Brandt never had to get a cat tattoo for attention. He just relied on, well, himself. You do realize that that tattoo got you like 2 days of run and a lifetime of regret. I mean, forget the cat. Next time, just get KB's face tattooed on your forearm as a constant reminder of what you could be. I mean, dude, you're supposed to advance your career after being EP of the greatest show on earth, not limit your options afterwards. But, Romy, now that I just smoked your entire crew, there's only one thing left to do. Rack meat. I'm out.
That's the thing. Now that he, quote, just smoked my entire crew, there's only one thing left to do. Give him the smoker. Masterbuilt. Rack him. There you go, clones. Podcast Tuesday. If you're listening to this now, episode 21 of the Jim Rome Podcast is waiting on your phone. Pound play. Check back tomorrow. I'm out.